All right. Thanks, Eric. Good afternoon. My name is Bill Wu. I'm a developer on the Excel team. So thank you for coming out today to spend an hour with us to talk about the Excel binary file format, which is also known as the BIF8 file format. So without further ado, let's get started. So this is kind of the agenda for today's presentation. I'll start with the I'll start with a brief overview of BIF8, starting with a brief history of how. Starting with a brief history of how BIF evolved over the years, and then I'll move on to some fundamental BIF8 concepts. And after that, I'll get to talk about the most common BIF8 structures that you might encounter in a BIF8 file. The goal here is to provide enough details about the BIF8 file format so you have enough information to navigate in a BIF8 file. It isn't intended to be a deep dive into the BIF8 file format. So for that, the MSXLS documentation is really your best bet. And actually, a lot of the information for this deck actually came straight out of the documentation. Lastly, I'll talk a little bit about security and robustness for BIF8, and as well as the future of BIF8. All right. So BIF started life as a simple flat file. You can think of that as just a stream of bytes, and each file contained exactly one sheet. Actually, that's about all there is to say about that. So it's either a worksheet, macro sheet, or a chart sheet. And back in the days, each version of Excel basically revved its file version. So Excel 2 had BIF 2, Excel 3 had BIF 3, and Excel 4 had BIF 4. And each one of these versions were not backward compatible with earlier versions. There was one thing I was just talking to Eric a little earlier. We do have the first version of Excel 1, that was launched on the Mac. And when I looked at the old sources, I actually found that there was a BIF 1 version, except we don't actually have any documentations on it, and it's really way before my time. Actually, all of these are before my time. So I didn't actually include it in this presentation here. All right, so starting with Excel 5, we switched over to using the Olay compound document as file storage. It's basically a file system within the file, and it's a structured collection of storages and streams, and hopefully it provided better logical organization of the workbook content instead of trying to cram everything into a single stream like we used to. So a BIF file now actually is a workbook of sheets, and it also can contain other contents such as Olay, VBA, and pivot tables. So again, Excel 5 used BIF 5, and the next version of Excel was Excel 95, which used BIF 7. And BIF 7 was really an extension of BIF 5. For the most part, it's exactly the same as BIF 5, except for a few multi-user records that are specific to BIF 7. And then Excel 97 started using BIF 8. So with the number of versions of Excel out there, and hopefully a few more versions to come, this was becoming a little bit more problematic because users now have to figure out what version of the file format they want to save to when they're sharing the file with somebody else. So the Excel 97 development team recognized this problem, and they solved it by adding functionality to the BIF8 format such that future versions of Excel can actually add features to the format without breaking any backward compatibility. So that's how BIF8 managed to be used by Excel 97 all the way to Excel 2003 as the default file format. We were able to add more features to it, but the file can go back and forth between those versions. There's one other file format that I wanted to mention here, which is the FATBIF format. And as the name suggests, it's a DrewStream file format that actually contains both the BIF5 stream and the BIF8 stream in the same file. So the way that works is Excel 5 or Excel 95 would always open the BIF5 stream, and it would also write out a flag in there to indicate that it has actually modified the file. And then when Excel 97 opens the file, it'll look at that flag to determine, if Excel 5 modified the file, and then it would choose to open the BIF 5 content. Otherwise, it would open the Excel 97 format. If any of you have actually worked with the IS-29500 file format, which is the OXML file format, you probably recognize FATBIF as kind of a predecessor to the alternate content block that's in that format. So, all right, so here's the question. What happened to BIF 6? Does anybody actually know what the answer to that one is? Except maybe Eric. All right. So what happened to BIF 6 is that after Excel 5, we tried to bring several apps under the Office 95 family. And one of the first things that we tried to do was to sync up the version numbers of all the apps in Office 95. And Word was already at version 6 at the time, so we basically had to skip version 6 and went straight to version 7, which explains why there's no BIF 6. All right, so with that history and a little bit of trivia, I think we're ready to dive into the BIF 8 fundamentals here. So the first BIF concept is the record. You can think of the record as the basic building block of any BIF file. A BIF record is made up of these three components: DRT, which is a 2-byte number specifying the record type. The CB is a 2-byte number specifying the record size, which is really just count of bytes of the record. And the RGB is an array of bytes that specifies the body of the record. One other thing to point out is BIF records use the little endian byte ordering. Array of bytes. It's a Hungarian notation that we use at Microsoft, so the RG stands for an array of, and the B is just bytes. So, all right, so I'm going to talk about the three components of a BIF record in a little bit more detail. The first component, as I said, was the RT, and it's basically a 2-byte number. For BIF 8, the valid range is from 0 to 8FF hex. And Mac Excel also reserved a range of 48 records there. So here are some examples of some of the BIF records you would actually encounter later on in this presentation. I've also included the record numbers for BIF 2 all the way to BIF 5 as well for comparison reasons. So the first thing you're going to notice is that for the same BIF record, there could actually be different BIF numbers across the different versions. But that's not always the case. So the reason for that is we use the high byte of the record number to indicate the version that the record applies to. And sometimes we would also change it because the structure of the record would change. But you can see that we don't consistently use this. The most consistent one you can see is with the BOF record, where we went from 9 to 209 to 409 to 809, all the way from BIF 2 to BIF 5. Starting with Excel 5 or BIF 5, we no longer use that mechanism. We actually use the BOF record to specify the version number. So we got away from updating the record number with different versions of BIF. So since we're going to be working with BIF 8 here, I guess you don't have to worry about the fact that the records have different version numbers in different versions. But hopefully now you know, when you look through the numbers and you're like, why the heck are they all over the place? That's kind of how they got that way today.
Yeah. One quick question. How many people are still working with binary formats before BIF 8?
Oh, wow.
Sometimes. Okay, there's some usage still there before.
Okay, that's good to know. All right. So I guess it wasn't a bad idea to include a little bit of information about the earlier BIF versions. So the second component of a record is the CB. CB stands for count of bytes, again, another Hungarian notation. Each record has a maximum size, and we have different sizes between BIF 2 to 5 and BIF 8. So in BIF 2 to 5, the maximum size was 2,080 bytes, and in BIF 8, the maximum size was 8,224 bytes. So the question here is, why do we even have a maximum size? This is pretty internal to the way we do load save in Excel. So to improve efficiency, Excel actually uses a shared buffer internally for load and save. But to avoid allocating memory for that buffer during save, which can fail, which would cause your save to fail. So that's one of the things we try to do very hard in Excel, which is try not to allocate any memory during save. So basically, to avoid having that out-of-memory situation, we allocate the buffer on the stack. And if you remember back when Excel 2 or even Excel 1 launched, the stack size was only 32K in size, so we couldn't really allocate a very big buffer to avoid blowing the stack. So in some way, that kind of controls how big of a buffer we actually used. All right. So most of the time, that's actually not a problem because a lot of our records fit easily within the maximum record size. And when the data to be saved is actually greater than the maximum size, the additional data is actually saved in a series of continued records. I think when I was just walking in, I heard Brent talking a little bit about some crazy Excel stuff. So here's the first one of those. Sorry? That's actually before my time as well. It was just one of those numbers they decided at the time. But I think one of the most likely reason is just the fact the records most of the time do fit nicely within that size as well, so we didn't really need to go anything bigger. But if the question is like if it's why it's not a multiple of twos or something, I actually don't have the answer for that. Sorry? Yeah. Good point. I never looked into that. All right. So the final component of the BIF record is the RGB. The RGB is the guts of the record where the content is stored. So if you ever cracked open the MSXLS documentation and saw that the records are sometimes really, really complicated, you might be wondering what the heck were these guys thinking when they designed these records. So what these guys were thinking was that they needed the record to be fast efficient because in an Excel you could potentially have lots and lots of cells and we really needed to be fast. And again, if you think about the hardware at the time, an 80386 at 20 megahertz and 1 megabyte of RAM was considered fast. So in order to make the load save code fast, a lot of the time, the records are just direct memory blitz of internal data structures. Sometimes they're often tightly packed, and sometimes they can represent multiple values that must be interpreted differently based on some other values in other fields. So that's part of the reason the records are as complex as they are. Now, that's not to say we couldn't have made them a little simpler, but that kind of partly explains the reason behind the complexity. All right, so the next BIF concept is the FRT. FRT stands for the future record type. So if you recall, we decided that with Excel 97, we weren't going to ref the file format again between versions. So we needed a mechanism to allow future versions of Excel to add features to Excel or to the file format and still round trip through early versions without breaking backwards compatibility. So that's the reason FRTs were born. The way FRTs work is they live in a reserved RT range, and whenever a version of Excel sees records in that range that it doesn't understand, it simply tucks them away at runtime and saves them back out during save. So this way allows unknown records from the future to be round-tripped through earlier versions without without loss. Oh, this is also the same mechanism that's used between Win and Mac Excel as well. Okay. All right. The another BIF 8 concept is the workbook stream. The workbook stream is the primary BIF 8 stream inside of a BIF 8 file. It's made up of a series of BIF records whose sequence is specified by ABNF rules in the MSXLS documentation. ABNF stands for Augmented Bacchus null form. I hope I pronounced that properly. It's basically a set of rules that is used to describe a language, and in this particular case, that language is the record sequence in Excel. So now the workbook stream itself is further divided into multiple substreams that are bookended by the BOF and EOF records, which I'll get to shortly. And the workbook the workbook stream itself is, oh, so I'll talk about that. So the we have two types of substreams. The first type is the global substream, which specifies global properties and data of a workbook. And then the second type of substream, the sheet substreams, which describe the data and properties of all the sheets that make up a book. So these could be worksheets, macro sheets, hot sheets, and various types of sheets. Let's see, what else do I have here? Okay, one other thing to point out, there could only be one global substream in the entire BIF 8 file, and that is always the first substream in the BIF stream. There can be one or more sheet substreams, and they always follow the global substream. Okay. So I think that's it for the BIF concepts. So the now we're going to get into some of the common BIF 8 structures. So the I said a little earlier that we were going to talk about the BOF and the EOF records. So here we are. The BOF and the EOF records are going to be the first and last records you ever encounter in a BIF 8 stream. The BOF record stands for the beginning file, and it marks the beginning of a substream. It also specifies the properties for that substream. So I've included the structure of the BOF record here for reference, and I'll go into a little bit of detail about some of the more interesting fields. The first field is the DT. It's used to specify the type of the substream. So a value of 5 is the global substream, a value of 10 is the worksheet substream, a value of 20 is the chart sheet substream, and a value of 40 is the macro sheet substream. The next field is the RUC build, which is used to specify the build of Excel that wrote out the file. So the reason we have that is mostly for diagnostic purposes. This way it allows us to determine if a file was saved out from a pre-RTM build of Excel, for example, or if we wanted to know if a file was saved out from a particular build in case we know there was a bug or some strange interaction with a particular build. The last field is the ver last Excel saved. This is a useful field because it specifies the version of Excel that saved out the Excel file. It's just a simple number starting with 0 for Excel 97, and we increment it by 1 for every new version of Excel. So currently at value 6, it's for Excel 2010. All right. The EOF is the stands for the end of file. It's the complementary record to the BOF record. It marks the end of a substream, and it also marks the end of a file when it belongs to the last substream in the BIF 8 stream. Okay, the other interesting BIF 8 structure is the bounce sheet 8 record. So for every sheet that lives in a workbook, there exists a bounce sheet 8 record in the global substream that specifies some information about that sheet. So again, I've got the structure of the bounce sheet 8 record here, and I'll talk a little bit about the more interesting fields in the record. The first one is LBPLYPOS, which actually specifies the stream position of the BOF record of the substream in the workbook stream. I have a little example later to make that a little clearer. The DT specifies the type of the sheet. Again, this is similar to the BOF. It could be a worksheet, macro sheet, and whatever. And the SDName field specifies the name of the sheet, so that's pretty straightforward. So here's the thing to call out about the LBPLYPOS record, the field. If you're writing a BIF reader, for example, instead of reading the workbook stream from beginning to end and extract the global substream and all the subsequent sheet substreams, the one thing to note is Excel doesn't do that. Excel uses the lbplypause field to jump directly to the buff to any of the sheet substreams. So the implication for that is if you read straight, well, usually that's not a problem because most of the time Excel actually writes out the records in a sequential order. But the problem comes when a hacker sticks in a bunch of random bytes immediately after one of these substreams, then a dumb BIF reader may actually try to read through and see some random stuff that he doesn't understand and claim the file is invalid, while Excel will use the lbplypause field to jump directly to the correct substream in this case. So similarly, if you try to modify an existing BIF8 file, this is also one of the things you have to watch out for, because if you modify a record that changes its size, you would also have to modify the lbplypause field to point to the correct location in the file. Otherwise, you would cause Excel to jump to the wrong location in the file when it's trying to read the file. All right. Oh, and I said there was going to be an example, so not the prettiest one, but it works. So this is an example of a workbook that contains three sheets, which is the default when you boot up Excel. So you can see the there are four substreams. There's the global substream, the three sheet substreams that follow it, and each one of them is bookended by the BOF and the EOF records. Then there are also the three bounce sheet 8 records in the global substream, and they each have a pointer to the BOF record in each one of the sheet substreams. So a discussion about Excel isn't really complete without talking about the cells in the worksheet. So here they are. We have six different types of cell records, one for each cell type. They all build on a common cell structure over to the right here. So the six cell types are the blank cell, the RK cell. RK is a size optimization used by Excel to store many commonly used numbers in a spreadsheet in 32 bits instead of the 64 bits that's normally required for an IEEE floating point number. The next cell is the Boolean error value type, followed by the number value. The next one is the label SST cell type, which stores a string in the cell. And the last one is the formula type. So here I have an example of a cell. It's the number cell type. So you see that it has the row and column and formatting information that's common in the cell structure, and plus its own value, which is the IEEE floating point number in the num field. Right. There are two additional cell records listed here, the MAL blank and the MARK. They are used to store multiple cells with the same data type but different values. So what we found in Excel is a lot of the time we have a lot of either blank cells with just formatting information or a lot of cells that are with the RK value in a consecutive way. So most of the time you might format a row of data and you get a whole bunch of blank cells with just formatting information. And we found that by storing these cells in a single record instead of individual records, we actually were able to get pretty good gains in this footprint. So for example, if you have a row of RK values, and back then when we have 256 columns, that would give you a size gain of about 2K roughly. So back in the day when Excel first started, that was pretty significant. So again, one of those crazy stuff that we do. Okay, the other interesting cell record that I wanted to talk about is the formula record. It is interesting because the formula record stores both the cell formula and its result all together, and its result can be different depending on the formula and what it evaluates to. So the formula can evaluate to these different types. It could either be a string value, a Boolean value, or an error value, or the actual number itself. The number would normally be the, again, IEEE floating point number. So what's special about this is Excel managed to fit all of those types, except for the string type, in the same space that would be normally used to store the IEEE floating point number. So in 8 bytes, it can store the number and also the type of the cell, as well as the values for the other types. The way this happens is a valid IEEE floating point number cannot have FFFF in its last 2 bytes, which is here in the structure. So Excel takes advantage of that fact, and also byte 1 to store the cell type and as well as the value. So the way that works is if you just follow the quick rule on the side here, if the val.fx/0 is equal to FFFF, then the type is specified by byte 1. If it's 0, it's a string type, and the string is stored in a string record that follows the formula record. If it's 1, it's a Boolean value that's stored in byte 3. If it's 2, it's an error value that's stored in byte 3. And if it's 3, it specifies a blank string value, which doesn't need any storage at all. And if fx/0 is not equal to FFFF, the value is the number type and stored in the val field itself. Lastly, the formula field just specified the cell formula in a tokenized representation known as the past expression. So I'm not going to go into that because that could easily take up another hour. But that is described in a lot of detail in the MSXLS documentation. All right, next up is the cell table. Since we've talked about cells, now we can talk about the cell tables. So the cell table in the file is divided into a series of row blocks. It's comprising of up to 32 rows, and within each of those blocks, a series of row records is saved out for each row that contain data or contain row formatting. And then after that, we have a series of cell records that's also saved for all the cells in that row block that contain data or cell formatting. So I've listed the cell table ABNF rule at the bottom of the slide, and quite often the ABNF rule is the best way to visualize how the records themselves are actually laid out on disk. So if you look at that, it basically says the cell table is made up of one or more row blocks. Each one of the row blocks can contain up to 32 rows, followed by a whole bunch of cells. And we call out what the cells are and the layout of the formula itself. Okay, I talked a little bit about cell formatting in the previous slide, so I wanted to give a little bit more information about how cell formatting works in Excel. It can get a little complicated. So so assume that each cell in Excel takes up 8 bytes of memory at runtime. So if I then selected the whole sheet, which is 256 columns by 64K rows, and applied a cell fill, you would expect that that would take up 128 megabytes. But if you actually bring up the task manager or try to save such a file, you actually see that Excel doesn't use anywhere near that amount of memory. And the reason for that is the cell formatting in Excel can actually come from multiple records. And the best way to understand that is to actually look at the order of precedence rule here that will help explain how things work. So the way that works is the formatting of a cell comes from the cell record if it has individual cell formatting. If the cell has no individual cell formatting, then it comes from the row record for that cell. And if the row has no formatting, then it comes from the column info record for that cell. And if all else fails, then the cell formatting comes from the default cell format record, which is the first XF record in the XFS rule. So in my example I just talked about earlier, we actually store the formatting in the column info record. In theory, you could actually put it on either the row formatting or the column formatting, but in practice, it's just a lot cheaper for us to put it on the column info record because well, there are just fewer fewer columns than there are rows. So that makes it easy in that case. I've got a couple more examples here to try to help explain this. So in the first example, which is the one on the left, first we apply a red fill to column C, and then we apply a yellow fill on row 4. So if you follow the order of precedence here, let's take a look at a few cells to understand how that works. So let's start with cell A4. First question, does it contain any individual cell formatting, which would be if you explicitly applied formatting to that cell. So the answer is no. Then the next rule is, does it contain any row formatting? It lives on row 4, so it would automatically inherit the formatting from row 4. So in this case, cell A4 would get the yellow fill formatting. So now let's look at cell C1. Again, does it contain individual cell formatting? No. Does it contain any row formatting? Again, no. Does it contain any column formatting? In this case, it does, and it inherits the red fill from column C. So the interesting one is the intersection of the two. So if you look at C4, going through the set of rules, you would also see that it inherits the yellow fill formatting from row 4, and there it is, it has the yellow fill, and life is good. So in this other example, I reversed the order of operation. So first I applied the yellow fill on row 4, then I apply a red fill on column C. So again, if you look at the same cells that we talked about earlier, cell A4 would again inherit the yellow fill formatting. Cell C1 would inherit the red fill. But if you look at cell C4, what happens in this case is if it automatically inherited the row formatting, which would override the column formatting, you would expect that that cell to be yellow and not red, which is what the user wanted. So in order to get around that, Excel would write out an extra cell, or would write out a cell record for C4 that says this cell has an individual cell formatting and it has the red fill, which is how you get the pattern that you see there. So it's probably a little bit more complicated than it really is. And once you understand the rules and how they apply, it's actually quite straightforward. And this is actually how Excel internally applies cell formatting to the cell table as well.
All right.
The next BIF8 structure is the shared string table. Remember earlier when I talked about the label SST record, I said it's for a cell value that is a string. But instead of storing that string in the record itself, we store the index to that string to a shared string table in the label SST record. The reason for that is in Excel, we found that a lot of the time there are a lot of repeating strings in a workbook, especially when lists and tables are used, or when Excel is used like a database, for example. So we were able to get a lot of size gains both in memory and also on disk by having Excel store the strings in a shared string table. So I've also included the ABNF for the shared string shared strings rule, which is really simple. It's just a bunch of SST records followed by, it's a single SST record followed by a bunch of continue records. So the structure of the SST record is included on the right. A couple of the interesting fields are the CST unique value, which specifies the number of unique strings in the cell string table. There's also the RGB value, which I need to make sure I get this right. It's an array of CST unique Excel Unicode rich extended strings. So what that really says is it's an array of this many strings, and each one of these strings can contain the string itself, any rich text formatting, and also any phonetic information about that string. So the rich text is the formatting information. The one other thing to note is, as a form of cheap compression, when Excel detects all the strings, all the characters in a string of the ANSI variety, it saves them as single byte characters. So basically we have the size of the string when saving to disk. And then on load, we would recognize that we saved them in such a form and would kind of decompress them to the proper uniform Unicode forms. Oh, sorry.
Uh-huh. We also change the number of bytes in character. So I would have, I had an example when I had a Russian string with the written one character. And when it's continued to the next weapon, it will change from the 2 bytes.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. I remember dealing with this a little while ago when we were doing the documentation, yes. It is documented in the documentation, so I remember that piece of it. Okay, so the question or the comment was about the fact that when a string is continued across a continue record, then it's possible for the string to actually change. I think it's the high byte bit that you're talking about. So in the first portion, it may not be compressed. In the second portion, it could be compressed. So that's one of the oddities you have to watch out for. Thank you. Forgot about that one. All right. The other BIF8 structure I wanted to talk about was objects in Excel. And again, as I was coming in, I heard about some discussions about objects in Excel. So I have a little bit about how that works here. So objects in Excel is also questions that come up quite often on the interop alias. And that's not too surprising because they could get a little complicated. So I'm not going to talk about all the details about how objects in Excel works. That's again in the MS XLS documentation and also in the MS ODraw documentation. But I do want to provide a little bit of information here to help you understand how the MS ODraw file format fits inside of a BIF8 file format. It can get a little confusing here. So the way this works is objects in Excel are provided by a shared drawing component in MSO, and they save their objects in the MSO draw file format. So you can think of that as yet another substream inside of the workbook or worksheet substream. So, and the contents of that substream is represented by a series of MSO drawing records. So that's the easy part. This is where it gets complicated. Whenever one of these MSO drawing records, whenever one of these objects actually contain client data that's stored on the Excel side, Excel would interrupt the MSO drawing stream to write its own records to store the client properties. So the best way to understand that is, again, by looking at the ABNF rule. So we have the objects rule that basically says it could be MSO drawing followed by either a text object rule or an OBJ rule. And you kind of repeat this over and over until you're done. The MSO drawing is MSO drawing record followed by continue records. The OBJ rule is OBJ followed by continue followed by the chart rule. And the text object is just the text object, TXO record followed by continue records. So let's see. I have an example here that hopefully will try to explain how that stuff works. So here's a file that contains four objects. And this is how the records would actually be laid out, or could potentially be laid out in the file. So we start with the MSO drawing record that covers object one and object two. And then we get into a continue record because object 2 and object 1 together are too big to fit into the same MSO drawing record, so it gets continued in a continue record. The continue record then continues with object 3, and then we see that there's a client data record in the MSO draw format. So we pause the MSO drawing stream, we write the OBJ record on the Excel side also for object 3, then we return to MSO drawing to start object 4. Again, we see that there is a client data record in the MSO draw format for object 4. So we interrupt that again, go back to Excel to write the OBJ record for object 4, go back to the MSO drawing record again, which is still on object 4 because we saw that it has the client text box record on the MSO odraw side of things. So that's for object 4. Again, we interrupt that, come back to Excel to write out the TXO record plus a couple continue records. So it's a little confusing at first, but once you understand how the interlacing between the two formats actually work, it's not too hard to follow. The one other thing to watch out for is the MSO drawing records. Sorry, the records inside of the MSO drawing record can specify sizes, and all of those sizes do not include the sizes of the Excel records. So the OBJ, the chart, or the TXO records, the sizes are not included in the MSO drawing record. Does that make sense? All right. Okay. So that's the end of the material I prepared for the BIF-8 overview. I'm going to move on to the additional considerations section now. So two things, security and robustness. You might remember earlier I said a lot of the time the content for a BIF record is just direct memory blitz of the internal data structures, and sometimes we also use unions, which means like the same content can represent different values or different types of values depending on some other values. So we do get a lot of optimizations in both performance and disk footprint this way, but it's also the cause of a lot of the security problems that we have experienced in Excel. So here I have a sampling of some of the common security problems we've seen. The most common one, obviously, is the buffer overrun due to assumed buffer lengths or due to integer overflow or underflow when we're trying to calculate those buffer lengths. This is especially true with strings. So other types of security problems include insufficient bounce checking with indices, insufficient type checking when those unions are used. Also, uninitialized structures due to assumed record sequence. So what this is say you have a record A that initializes structure foo, and you have another record B that makes use of the information that was in record A. Now, if you never saw record A, then the structure foo could just be any random uninitialized values, or in the worst case, it could actually be pre-populated by some of the records that you have loaded earlier, which could simply be hacker controlled data. Another related problem is the mismatched content in multiple records. So as with the previous example, if record B depends on record A, record B sometimes can also make assumptions about record A because it has some of the same information in its own record. But if it tries to make use of that record without validating that, you know, the two records are actually in sync, it could potentially try to read some information that it was expecting to be in record A but actually isn't there. All right. So that's a quick summary of the some of the common security problems we've encountered with BIF-8. And quite often, a lot of these security issues are also robustness issues. So if these vulnerabilities don't actually end up in an exploit, most likely they would result in a crash or some form of data corruption. So a lot of the time we found that when fixing these security holes, we end up fixing a lot of these robustness issues as well. In addition, Excel can also take record-specific actions when it's trying to recover from data corruption. For example, we can either try to use some default values when some value doesn't make sense. If it's indexed to the string table and it's out of bounds, we'll probably just set it to no string. Or, you know, we can always ignore a series of badly formed records, so in effect dropping those features from the file format altogether when we're trying to recover a bad file. So now we come to the future of BIF-8. So here I've enumerated some of the facts about BIF-8. So I'll just go through them quickly. BIF-8 is the default file format for Excel 97, 2000, 2002, and 2003. BIF 8 is supported by all recent versions of Excel, including the latest version, Excel 2010. Excel 97 to 2003 features are fully supported in BIF 8. Most of the Excel 2007 features are also supported in BIF 8, the primary exception being the larger cell table. And currently, BIF 8 is frozen at the Excel 2007 feature level. What that means is Excel 2010 and later will no longer extend the file format. So what does that mean for the future of BIF 8? So given that BIF was the default file format for Excel for four versions and is still in use today, there are probably millions upon millions of BIF 8 files out there. So for the foreseeable future, Excel will continue to support BIF 8, even though we won't be adding any more new features to it. So there. Yes? It's not. That's what I said here. For the most part, Excel 2000 features are supported in BIF 8, except for the larger cell table. So if you recall one of the earlier slides when I talked about the data structure of a cell, the cell has a row and column component, and they are both limited to 2 bytes. So the larger cell table in Excel 2007 is 16,000 by 1 million, so they wouldn't fit in the BIF 8 record for a cell. So that's one of the reasons why we do have the new file formats.
Can you just state as an XLS extension, is there
a 2007
specific
feature? Well, potentially you could. It does get a little bit more complicated, but at the time, one of the things we were also trying to do was we wanted to create a new open file format, which was what resulted in OpenXML. And when we created the OpenXML file format, we also recognized that for an application like Excel, where we have potentially tons and tons of cells, especially with the larger cell table, an XML-based file format could potentially be slow. So that's why we had added the XLSB file format. And the reason why we didn't just simply extend the XLS file format versus creating a brand new file format altogether was internally we actually tried to keep the XLSX and XLSB files in sync with each other. So internally we're writing out to the same format. We have a layer that converts it to either the XLSX format or the XLSB format. So that way allows us to have this new faster binary file format, but that would also be kept feature complete with each new version of Excel. That way we're able to keep the XLS code paths separate from the OpenXML code path because they are inherently different. There isn't actually. In the specification, we didn't actually specify the number of rows or number of columns that you could actually have in that specification. We do have implementers' notes that explain what the Excel limits are in that particular format. So this is an internal limit that Excel has when using that particular file format. The file format itself does not have that inherent limitation. Any other questions? Okay, so here are the resources that I used when I was trying to put together this deck. And as I said before, the MSXLS documentation is really your best available resource for anything about the BIF 8 file format. I also included MSODraw and MSCFB because those were the other two formats that I referenced in this presentation. One other thing to note, when I typed the book names, bracket MSXLS or MSODraw and MSCFB in Bing, these were the first links that came out, so I think we did a good job there. So, all right, that's the end of my talk. Do people have any other questions?
If there are no questions, let's take a few minutes.